It's the Central Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Today, a Life of Learning special focus on avoiding and dealing with inappropriate fraternization between students and teachers and other school personnel. David Campbell is now retired after a 40-plus year career as a teacher and a teacher of teachers. He taught at high school and later at the University of Pittsburgh and California University of Pennsylvania, where he taught student teachers. David Campbell, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
When you hear of reports about a teacher being charged with sexually assaulting a student, are you shocked? Are you surprised?
No, not at all.
Why?
Because it's the natural kind of thing that happens in every institution I've been in, and even when I taught in England, same sort of thing.
So when you were teaching high school, did you become aware of incidents in your school where students were being assaulted? And at that time, we didn't have the mandatory reporting laws as well.
No, nobody talked about it in the one house.
But it was known but not talked about?
No, no one talked about it. Some of the principals may have known, but teachers wouldn't talk about it. I knew about it because I had student teachers, and they reported back to me.
What is your advice to young teachers, either from the student initiating or even if they're going to be, shall I say, attracted to a minor?
There are really good ways to do this. And the way we usually would do it is say, if they drop love notes on your desk, which they do, that happened to me a lot of times. You know, it doesn't anymore, of course, but it did back then. And I would just say, thanks for your note, you know. And you can then, and you should legally say, it's inappropriate. And then there's my...
At that point, though, do you also notify the chair of your department, if it's a bigger school, your assistant principal, your principal, whatever, somebody in authority above you that, look, I got this. This is how I dealt with it. So it's sort of on the record.
You should. Everything should be on the record. Now, a lot of that doesn't happen. They just ignore it. They figure it's just kind of normal. But if you handle it the right way, the girl will be fine. You know, and boys, too. Boys come on to the teachers all the time. With the women teachers. They figure they're wonderful and young and the teachers will react to them. And you have to be able to deal with that.
Since the Sandusky scandal at Penn State, more than a dozen laws were passed regarding child abuse and many apply to districts. We found out earlier in this program the districts have been tightening their policies and providing more information to teachers to avoid situations. But has it changed through the years? Was there much when you were teaching in public schools as far as information? And was there much as you were at the University of Pittsburgh and Cal U teaching future teachers as far as this particular subject matter of how to avoid the do's and don'ts, if you would?
Hardly ever.
Why? Was it just not thought about or just hidden?
It was hidden. We knew they existed. There is a way to deal with it, you know, but you need to have a special training for the teachers, and we don't do that kind of special training.
Where should they get this training? In college while they're preparing as their student teaching in their school districts, as they are get their first jobs, is it at all levels?
It should be right at the beginning.
And in college while they're still in college?
And it should be, especially.
Because I know Duquesne has incorporated this into their curriculum.
Yeah, and you just don't say it's against the law and this sort of thing. So you have to say, how do you deal with it when it first begins? And that means you're working with human development. How are they thinking? How is this adolescent thinking, this boy or this girl? And how can you do it without causing harm to the kid?
Well, there's predatory nature, and there's also illegal relationships because of ages.
Yeah, it used to be the age of consent, but it was still not acceptable. What they would do with teachers, they would ask them to resign. And then they would give them a recommendation and go to another school.
So the old passed the trash.
Oh, yeah, that was a predatory thing, and that's how they took care of that. We could do this easily with teachers before they go out. And then we would have a weekly seminar. Things like that came up, and then I would tell them how to deal with it.
But are we asking a lot of our teachers? We're asking them to engage students, help them to learn what they're supposed to be learning, but we're asking teachers to do so much more. Are we asking too much of our teachers?
Of course you are. You know how secondary teachers are prepared? In subject matter. Almost all their courses, dozens of courses in math and science and all this, and they're taught to do a lesson, which begins at the bell and ends at the bell. Anything else beyond that, they don't want to even deal with, most of them. That's why we have to do human development. That means putting a lot of counselors in who do more than get kids ready for the tests and for going to college.
Counselors in the school districts.
Yeah. We want counselors who are well-trained and prepared to deal with adolescent development, and we don't have them. They're so overworked, the counselors, they can't do anything.
Is it because you think that they are counseling toward an academic future rather than, a well-rounded individual?
Sure, and they have hundreds of students. For every student in secondary education, that's middle and high school, where they're going through all this turmoil, and it's more turmoil now than before, you need somebody that knows them personally.
Let me follow up on that. And so we have teachers who are trying to engage, as I said before, mm-hmm. trying to get the student interested in learning. And sometimes, shall we say, that's a personal interest. Come on, John, we need you to get interested, or find out what they're interested in and then tie it to the lesson or tie it to the subject matter. Yeah. But where do you cross the line to show interest as an individual but not to cross that line to something inappropriate?
Good teachers always do that. They do what I'm calling human development. They'll say, how are things going, John? Things at home okay? See? In other words, you have to have time to do that. And I did that right from the start. One of the examples was I was a music teacher. I don't know anything but chords and singing and band, you know. But I had an office, and they would congregate in the office during lunch, gave up lunch finally, breaks, after school, before school. And then the one story that I told, which was first year out, two girls, sisters, 14 and 13, came in. And they're talking away, and I'm listening. I always listen in no rush and don't make any judgmental calls because then you're their parent. And they'll listen to you, they'll talk to you. If you don't come on like a parent, you come on like somebody who's a good listener. And pretty soon they're telling me that they've both been sleeping for a year, with a 35-year-old married man.
Was this a teacher or just outside?
No, just outside.
Okay.
But you see, they knew me enough to know I wouldn't say anything to them and say how horrible and disgusting and all this. That's part of what you have to be able to do. So I listened to them, and then they said goodbye. The bell rang, and I knew that they had come to me to do something to get them out of that situation. So I went to a counselor, a nice older lady, and she was just frightened by the whole thing. They arrested the guy the next day.
Our look at this subject was inspired by the recent events taking place in the Plum School District. As we move forward, what still needs to be done to reduce the number of incidents of improper fraternization?
All right, if you have to be a good listener, I can train people to do that, but you can't ask classroom teachers to do it. They don't have the time, and they're definitely not prepared to do it. But there's no one to help that girl out of that situation. There's no counselor who will see them in the hall and say, something going on with you, come see me right now, and take them into the office. And that's what really bothers me.
Does this go back to the numbers that you were talking about?
Yeah.
To too few counselors for too many students?
Oh, yeah. You can't be a counselor to 300 or 400 students. So you should be hiring these kinds of people. Instead of some of the other things we're doing, that's what we should be hiring, so that you can deal with these kids' problems. But they don't do that, you know. And the classroom teacher can't do much.
Do we have enough laws in place, and now they have to be adhered to, and then what the districts have to do at their level, the districts, including the hiring of more counselors, better instruction for teachers, what?
We have enough laws. But we really need to take these young people and say, look, they have no one to talk to. They get into these situations because there's no one to talk with them.
David Campbell, thank you so much.
I was glad to be here. I hope it would help.
David Campbell had a 40-year-plus career of teaching and teaching aspiring teachers. He's a retired professor from the University of Pittsburgh and California University of Pennsylvania. That concludes this Life of Learning special on Essential Pittsburgh on preventing inappropriate teacher-student relationships. The producer is Marcus Charleston. I'm Kevin Gavin, sitting in for Paul Guggenheimer. Tune in tomorrow for another Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.